Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 387 of the podcast. And it's Friday, the 3rd of August, 2018, as I record this. So today I have a fantastic interview with Julie Huss and Jonathan McLean on how they turned Julie's books into a successful TV pilot pitch. And it's very exciting. It's a really exciting interview, but it's also great at helping you focus. This interview, which I obviously recorded a few weeks back, was really instrumental in me deciding to stop pursuing the screenwriting for now and focus on developing my writing craft as a fiction writer under JF Penn, and also focus on accumulating more of a backlist and with the aim of attracting the right partners. And Julie and Jonathan talk about this, and I just found it a fascinating interview. It really helped me. So whether or not you're interested in screenwriting or TV pitches or anything, I think you'll learn a lot also about co-writing and just all kinds of things. Julie is quite well known in the, well, very well known in the romance writer niche particularly. And she is a really good writer. So I think this is fascinating. Coming up soon. So we're gonna jump on today to my personal update. Valley of Dry Bones is 36,000 words in, which feels really good. And it's been a bit of a romp this week, thanks to a batch of dictation. The interview with Christopher really helped me as well. And I have been back into dictation and really sort of broken the back of the story with a number of sessions. I've been dictating and then sort of, you know, two and a half, 3,000 word sessions, and then going back through and sort of cycling through that, doing a light edit, expanding on it, adding in details, that type of thing. So I really feel like the dictation is starting to work again. It's one of those things, like whenever we stop writing a certain thing, the longer we go without getting back into it, the more difficult it becomes. So I feel like I'm back into a role with dictation. And yeah, definitely thanks to Christopher's interview on that. I've also almost finished moving my books from CreateSpace to KDP Print. Just a few tips for you. If you're going to go through that process and you have a backlist, you will get a lot of verification emails about your copyright, whether you are the right author, especially if your email address doesn't, your email address name doesn't match the name on the book. I've also had some spine formatting issues, the space for the barcode formatting issues. I have had to update categories, which is probably a good thing. And also I've been, this is kind of one of those things, and it reminds me of how amusing conversation I had in Oregon with Christine Catherine Rush. Last year, almost a year ago. So basically, because I've not, you know, I've been a reader for a long time, but I've not been in the publishing industry as such. So I don't necessarily know the right terminology for everything. So when I started doing ebook box sets, which are for me three ebooks in one file, and the word box set is used in the indie author space a lot for a digital file with multiple books. That is, you know, obviously the word bundle is used as well, but ebook box set has become quite a normal term. So anyway, then I did print versions of those books. And I remember Chris Rush telling me that is not a box set, that is an omnibus. I think the word is omnibus. Basically, you can't use the word box set for a print version of three books. And I was like, why not? That's crazy. Can't we just use the language we want to use? Anyway, just as an update, my books, my print version of the ebook box set, so say the first three books in the Arcane series, they all got stopped. And basically they said, you can't use the word box set for three print books in one. that terminology breaks KDP print. So even though I could do it with CreateSpace, you can't do that with KDP print. So I've had to, I'm struggling to get those through, basically. I think I'll just have to republish them with the word omnibus. But that made me laugh anyway. The things we learn over time. But I'm just really happy to be able to review all my reporting. The majority of the Amazon reporting anyway, in one place. You never know, maybe one day they'll roll audiobooks into it and it'll all be much easier. So I've done that. I've also redone my landing pages for the Creative Pen. So if you go to thecreativepen.com/resources, or the Start Here page, if you go to the website, all my links to the main content pages are there. So writing fiction, nonfiction, publishing, marketing, making a living with your writing, and the author mindset. So there's six main content landing pages, and each of those have links to loads of articles and interviews. And I've been meaning to do this for ages, but it's really good to feel like I've wrangled that content into shape. As the Creative Pen moves to 10 years, just really trying to keep up, and we get new content every week and obviously new podcasts. So really important to do that for new people coming in. It might feel, if you've been listening to the show for a long time or you've been indie for a while, it can be hard to kind of go back to your beginner mindset. But there are people coming into this space every single day and they still have the same questions that we all did when we started out. So that's important. So thecreativepen.com/resources for links to all the main content pages. I've also updated the author blueprint again, and I'll send that out to my list this week. And if you're not on the list, go to thecreativepen.com/blueprint to get the latest version. So I guess I feel like I've been doing quite a lot of housekeeping jobs as well as creating more words in Valley of Dry Bones. I feel like I'm on a bit of a roll. After my Spanish breaks and all of that, I feel like, yeah, I need to do some work. And I really feel like August is a good time to do some work for those of us who don't have to deal with school holidays. I realise that many of you are dealing with that. Fun times. Okay, so thanks for all your emails and tweets this week. Lots of comments on my year in review, and I'm glad so many of you have taken the chance to refocus. Trisha Cerrone or Cerrone says, loved your personal year in review. Your honesty and transparency are so valuable, as is your strategy going forward. Great. Thanks, Trisha. And I really hope that you have a good refocusing session as well. Jocelyn says, listening to the podcast this evening as I walked to the Queensland Library for the Indie Publishing Forum 2018. Great episode. And this is so funny because I, at the Queensland Library, which is in Brisbane, Australia, is where I did the Year of the Novel in 2009, I think it was. Or 2010, I think it was 2010. And back then, the Queensland Library was definitely very focused on traditional publishing. And I don't even think there was a discussion on publishing much really in that Year of a novel. It was about writing. But it's so fascinating how things have changed, that there's actually a session on the indie publishing, world at the Queensland Library. So really good to hear that. Bethany Hensel says, loved your interview with Chris Downing, but I didn't see the link for the Sony dictation recorder you were talking about. Can I get the link? Yes, my link is thecreativepen.com/Sony, S-O-N-Y, and that goes to an Amazon product page. Yes, it's an affiliate link for the Sony recorder that I use. So basically, my dictation process is I'm in the cupboard. I'm either in the cupboard or I have a room that I'm renting down at the a local co-working space that I rent for a couple of hours, and I just talk into my Sony recorder, and then I plug that into Dragon, the transcription thing in Dragon, and that creates my first draft. So it's really cheap. So thecreativepen.com/Sony. It's much cheaper than Dragon software. And of course, there are lots of other options. You don't have to use Dragon, but we're not going to go back into that. Go listen to that interview with Christopher, or get his book, Foolproof Dictation. Or of course, I have lots of interviews on dictation, including the wonderful Scott Baker, who is, you know, talks about training your dragon and that type of thing. Comments, another couple of comments. Leanne Beckett says, the timing was awesome as I had decided to begin transcribing last week and have been weeding through all the info trying to figure out how to set things up. I thought I would transcribe directly into Scrivener on my iPhone, but now I can see that would be a bad idea. Yes, please do not try and transcribe straight into Scrivener. You seriously, it will go wrong. And don't do it into Word either. That will also go wrong. Just do it into a text editor. And finally, T. Thorn Coyle says, thanks for the post on your roundup. Congratulations on deciding to focus on JF Pen. I'd be interested in learning more about how to market print versus ebooks, as I'm only just getting into Ingram Spark. Okay, so I did want to comment on this, because what I think mainly is that once your books are available more widely in print, you kind of naturally will sell more in print. I feel like that's the first thing. If your books are available, like I tweeted a picture of, I found How to Market a Book in a bookstore, print bookstore in Edinburgh. And the only reason they had that book in there is because it's on Ingram Spark and they can get it with a discount. So that's just one example of the books being more available. And if you're marketing in general, then people are going to discover more of your print books. Also, you can do advertising on print if you're publishing through KDP print. So that is another little tip that people are starting to pick up on. And I was talking about this with Orna Ross on the Alliance of Independent Authors salon this week. And we were saying, this is going to be very interesting, because does this mean that if indies start advertising print more, is that going to take print market share from traditional publishers? So we shall see, because actually most indie authors will get more of a profit on print than many traditionally published authors will. So I tend to add on $2 with my print books. So, you know, I still make more money on an ebook, but I still, you know, it's worth it on a print book. So we shall see. So today's show is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life, and I will play a word from Kobo in a minute. Thanks to everyone supporting the show on Patreon. Thanks to new patrons, Terry Piccone or Piccone, Troy Ducart, Kat Tipton, Michael Campbell, and to T. Thorn Coyle and Marilyn for increasing their pledges. I really do appreciate your support on Patreon. Demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And I put out another extra audio this week for Patreon supporters. I have been doing those little extras, either private things that I do or the audio from my YouTube channel. So this week I put up How to Get Reviews, which is on YouTube. But if you prefer audio, then this is a way to get lots of extra audio. So basically, Patreon supporters now are getting extra audio every week. So the in-between episodes are now just Patreon supporters only. And you'll also get the monthly Q&A audio, which I will put out in a week or so. You can support the show on Patreon with just a couple of dollars a month, or a couple of coffees a month if you fancy. So you can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, here's a word from Kobo Writing Life, and then we'll get on with the interview.
Hey, Creative Pen listeners, I'm Chrissy, the director of Kobo Writing Life, Kobo's free self-publishing platform created by authors for authors.
And I'm Stephanie. I work on our publisher operations team.
We're just guessing here, but you seem to like podcasts for writers.
Did you know that we also have a podcast for writers?
It is the Kobo Writing Life podcast. We feature interviews with best-selling authors, tips on the craft and business of writing, and advice for successfully self-publishing.
In recent episodes, we talked to BookBub and asked them the number one question everyone wants to know. What are BookBub editors looking for when they choose titles to be featured in their deals emails? And we interviewed USA Today bestselling author Serena Bowen about running a successful self-publishing business, collaborating with other authors, and the view of romance books in the media.
Most recently, we spoke to Overdrive about what librarians are looking for when buying ebooks.
So check us out.
The Kobo Writing Life Podcast.
Available for download on all major podcast platforms.
Today, I'm here with two guests. Welcome, Julie and Jonathan.
Hi.
Hello.
So just a little introduction. Julie Huss is an award-nominated New York Times and USA Today best-selling romance author with millions of copies of her awesome books sold around the world. Julie's been on the show before. She's a fantastic guest. Jonathan McLean is an award-winning stage actor, screenwriter, and film and TV actor, appearing in programs like Grey's Anatomy and Mad Men. He's also an award-winning audiobook narrator. I have superstars here today. Julie and Jonathan, which is crazy. Julie and Jonathan now co-write romance together as Huss McLean, and their latest book is The Sexpert, and they have lots of stuff going on. So, guys, welcome. And you met through audiobook narration. Let's talk about that first. Lots of authors have fantastic narrators, but how did you move from that into co-writing? So whoever asked who first should probably start.
Jonathan, right?
Oh, well, yeah, I made the initial overture just to say thank you for finding me, because Julie had heard something I had narrated and asked her audiobook publisher to track me down so that I could do some narration for her. And when I finished, you know, I always, if I have the opportunity to thank someone for a job, certainly I wanted to do that. But then in the case of Julie, I was also just struck by the complexity of the writing and some of the complex themes she was exploring. She's, you know, she has the incredible ability to get right to the heart of a scene when she's writing. And I think that I was really sort of struck by the poetry combined with the efficiency. I mean, there was just a lot about it that really took me by surprise and made me really pleased and thrilled to be a part of her work. So when I reached out to her, I just said, hey, thank you so much. And also compliment. and she wrote back in kind. And then you should talk about how I then reached out after that, because it was months after that when I approached you with my idea.
Yeah. So we connected on Twitter at first, and then we moved into email. It was basically just, thank you, I love, you know, what you do. And he said the same thing back. And then he did the company. He did the narration for the company, which is a compilation of three books that I wrote in 2014. And then he emailed to say, I really enjoyed that. Right, Jonathan?
And
so we started talking a little more. And then he sent me this long email, like asking, hey, just bear with me for a minute. I'm going to like spill a whole bunch of words out into this email and see what you think at the end. And at the end, he was like, do you want to write a screenplay for this company book? Right. So that's how it started. A teleplay, I guess. It's the correct.
Yeah. Yes. As opposed to a film I thought it was a TV series. I thought it was a TV series. And as it turns out, it is a TV series, because, not bearing the lead too deeply for anyone who doesn't already know, this is ultimately how we jumped ahead before we started writing books together. Mm-hmm. She said, great. I have a relationship with the executive producers of Handmaid's Tale. And so I approached them and said, I have access to this really interesting best-selling property. And I think that I can convince the author to work together to try and adapt it. And they got on board. And funnily enough, this Monday that we are speaking in this conversation, was last week, is finally sort of the full culmination of that. Like, we went through the process of pitching it, we closed the deal, we got them to agree to produce it, we et cetera. And then last week I finally brought in the fully realized version of what we're going to take to Netflix and Hulu and all the other places we're going to try and sell it. And they're really excited about it. So it's actually a really it's a momentous time to talk about.
Yeah, it is. It's like almost 1 year, right? Like that we finished. Yeah. Well, we finished that screenplay pretty fast, don't you think?
The pilot? Yeah, well, television moves fast. And so I also, you know, I hadn't done the thing you're supposed to do in Hollywood, which is check with your agents and so forth and say, do you think this will sell? Because I just don't care what they think. And but you never know who's got similar ideas percolating. And even though Julie's world is pretty inimitable, you know, sometimes you'll take a thing out and they'll say, well, we're working on something that sort of resembles this. So I wanted to get into it as quickly as possible. So we moved swiftly through that. But then you should again talk about this because you were the one who had the next idea, which knocked me back a few paces when you suggested it.
Well, because here, so, okay, when he sent me that long email about asking about writing the screenplay together, the teleplay, and then I said yes, and then he wrote back with a sample scene. So that's where it started, right, Jonathan? Like the sample scene that you sent me. Right. Of the very first, just a quick imagining of what my book could be. And it was beautiful. It was like, it blew me away. Like it literally blew me away. And so I wrote back and I said, I might not know a lot of things in this world, but I know good writing. And, I said, that's you, like, you know how to write. And so I knew if I'm not like a collaborator, so I'm not one of those people who collaborate. But I thought if I'm going to collaborate with somebody, I think like maybe he's the guy because we got along so well, right? And the screenplay was super fun and super easy. Like it just went so great. And so then I was like, maybe we should write some romance books or whatever. It didn't even need to be romance. It's like, maybe we should write something else together. And so we did end up doing the romance.
Wow. Okay. So now everyone's at, like, we've jumped right into the Hollywood. Now nobody cares about your books. Everyone wants to know about the TV series. But no, it's so interesting. So I have a couple of follow-up questions from that. So first of all, can you just talk a bit more about the adaptation process? So Julie had a book, Jonathan narrated it, but all the rights at that point sat with Julie. And then you co-wrote a screenplay together, and the rights of the screenplay now belong to both of you jointly. So everyone needs to know that, really important, that when you co-write that, that is a different property. And then you moved into selling it. So we'll come back to selling it. What were the challenges of adaptation, Julie, of your own work, and Jonathan of someone else's work?
Well, for me, I don't think it was challenging at all because the world is big. And there, it's like a huge world with so many characters. And there was so much story that I never got to write because it's a romance, right? So this was a thing. I had to keep the world in a romance kind of book and plot. And so there was so much of it that never got told that I told Jonathan, let's just remake it. Like, use these characters and use this plot, but just remake the whole thing. And so I didn't care what we did as long as we were doing it in the world. And so I think it went really easy, don't you, Jonathan?
Yeah. The challenge, you know, the answer to the question, what were the challenges? There are very few. But that owes to the fact that Julie was not precious, as she just sort of described, about preserving every bit of minutia. Because things simply don't work sometimes in translation. You know, you can't translate someone's inner monologue onto the screen. It's a visual medium. And so what struck me was how amenable she was to me suggesting, can we move this around? Can we change this? Can we motivate this? The only challenge, I guess, would arise would arise when there are 13 books that comprise the series, that comprise the world. I did not narrate all 13. I did not have time to read all 13. And Julie is so prolific that the only time we would really bump up against challenges would be when I would say, now, why did this happen? Because I don't know if I read this. And Julie would be like, give me an hour. Let me go back and reread my own books. and figure out why I had this happen. Those were some of the challenges. It's just dense, the density of the material. I'll tease a little bit of the sort of epicenter of the pitch, which is one of the key lines that I make when I'm selling the show is, the best analog for this show isn't another romance novel. The best analog for this series is Game of Thrones, just in terms of scope and depth. And what I say is, you know, if Game of Thrones is a big sweeping show about the pursuit of power, which it is, The Company is a big sweeping show about the destruction of power. And so that just gives context for how vast what we're dealing with is. So that was the only challenge, was just size. But the advantage to having the author in my corner was that she was so keen to greenlight every necessary change that it made life a lot easier. Easier going forward too. When we get into it, you know, a network, they're going to want to change everything because that's what they do. And Julie's very good about knowing what to fight for and what to not fight about, which I think.
And the other thing is that Jonathan never had a bad idea. I mean, I will say that he never, like, he understood everything I was trying to get out of that story. And like all the ideas were like great. And it's so, it was just super fun.
Mm. Yeah. Well, so let's talk about that process of selling. So you said it's been a year already, for example. So timing is one of those things with screenplays and adaptation and all of that, in that it takes a long time. But Jonathan, you also mentioned that you have relationships. So you already had someone to pitch. You also have an agent, although they weren't necessarily involved. So the process of getting and Julie's super famous in a small way, but not like, you know, massively famous. So when you're taking a relatively unknown, is that offensive? Hopefully not.
No, it's not.
Yeah. Somebody who the producers or whatever might not have heard of to these people. How did you, and the fact that Julie's an indie author, which some people have an issue with. What were some of the relationship things that you went through there, and were there any hurdles, I guess?
Well, the first thing I would push back on just slightly is the notion, you're absolutely right that she is not sort of in the cultural zeitgeist, but there are very few people who are, I would say. The comparison that I made, to answer your question specifically, the comparison I made is, I said, think of The Walking Dead. Because The Walking Dead was a very successful commodity in that graphic novel, you know, readership, Comic-Con community. But the broader public had never heard of The Walking Dead. And so, and that had started off, I think, is, I'm not sure, but I said it did, started off, I think, as an independently published affair that Kirkman was creating. And so to me, the comparison to other precedent products like The Walking Dead made it easy for people to sort of wrap their minds around, oh, I might not know this, but there is a subgenre of people out there who are rabid and enthusiastic. And in that world, this person is a big deal. So the idea that that's true was helpful. The fact that within her sphere, inside of her orbit, Julie is a big deal is also helpful. I can point to very specific measurable metrics. She is in the top 50 best-selling romance novelists on Amazon's ranking system. She has made the New York Times bestsellers list. She has been on the USA Today list 18 times. Those things catch attention. She has sold over 1 million copies of her books. I mean, that's a nice round number that people can easily get their heads around. The other thing that I was not expecting, and that Julie's invitation to me to write romance novels with her helped immeasurably, is that now we are part of the narrative. The idea that actor narrates a romance novel, approaches an author, author invites him. Now they write romance books together. And in 3 days, we're going to be having our coming out party at Book Bonanza in Denver, right? Like this big, like it is, the narrative is so interesting to people in Hollywood. And I've been around a long time and people know me and they're like, oh my God, this is amazing. And it's a great cocktail party story. And so that really sets the table in an intriguing, sort of interesting way. Because the story behind the story is just as entertaining. And so I mean, the way it happened does not happen, which is, you know, you take something out 50 times and you get a bunch of rejections. I went to the executive producers of Handmaid's Tale at MGM TV and I said, I have this idea. And within like 3 months, they said, OK, great, we're in. We'll do it. And I think it was just a perfect storm of opportunity.
Meant to be.
Or it was, as we say in Yiddish, it was beshert.
Well, this is what, and I don't think anyone should think that this is a first time rodeo for either of you, right? I mean, from when I looked, I didn't know you, Jonathan, until Julie pointed me at you. And then you've had this very long career in acting. Yeah. And Julie's had multiple careers, but has written a ton of books. And, you know, you two are not just like first time people out, first screenplay sold to big producers. It's really important people realize how much experience you both have and how many relationships you both have with all your, you know, all the different people. I'm very interested there. You both talked about mutual respect for each other's writing, but you both are very good at selling, clearly. So how important with screenplays? So I've written a couple of screenplays, a couple of adaptations, lots of people listening have too. But it seems to me that the selling part of screenwriting is just as important as the actual writing. So what would be your comments on that?
You want me to talk about that because I'm...
Oh, yeah, that's all you.
Okay. I had this conversation a lot. I had lunch with a very successful writer friend a couple of days ago, and we were chatting about the fact that... if you want to call it an advantage, I've been acting, I've been performing for 30 years. And so getting in a room and standing with a whiteboard behind me with a character map of all the characters and then doing basically a 27-minute monologue is something that I feel very comfortable with. And I think it is incredibly helpful. Pitching is... And I love that you said this, Joanna, because pitching is not writing, right? It is not even creating. It is not anything to do with the creator, but it is sales entirely. And some people have a skill set with that gives them an advantage. But I will say that while all of that is true and you want to charm the room and you want to, when all is said and done, it really is about the underlying product. And so, you know, Vince Gilligan, who created Breaking Bad, is a terrific storyteller. But the truth of the matter is that he just had a great story to tell. And even inside of that, he sort of famously didn't sell it many, 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 many places. And then finally, AMC said, we'll do it. And at that point in time, I think his joke was, AMC, why don't I just sell it to the Home Gardening Channel? Like, who's going to, like, what, who cares? Or more currently, you know, Stranger Things was passed on by 19 different outlets before they finally found a home at Netflix. And that's not because the Duffer brothers, got better at pitching. It's just because, like Julie said, the stars may have aligned in this case. The stars have to align to sell anything. But Julie helped me with something, to be quite candid, that I've always kind of hiccuped on, which is that I buy into the artist mythos a lot. And I have for years struggled in Hollywood, coming from a stage background in New York, with the idea that I am commodifying my art. And Julie is actually the one who has helped me in the last year and change overcome the notion that salesmanship and creation are not mutually exclusive. And Julie's genius is at marketing. So the other thing that's to my great advantage when I go in to sell these things in the room is that I have very beautiful, successful intellectual property, existing content that Julie made that I can hold up and say, look at this beautiful artwork. But, you know, she just has a natural gift for understanding how to catch people's attention. And so I would argue that even though I'm the, you know, you kick this over to me because you're like, hey, this is all you, but you set the table for me to go in and be able to like bring something that's worthy of being sold. And I think that, you know, if there were a formula, if there were something that any of us, and you know this very well, then it wouldn't be special and nothing would matter because everybody would be doing it. Right. Mm. So because I have not sold I said this to my agent the other day. He was like, "You feeling good?" I was like, "I feel great. I've not sold plenty of things. I know how to do that. That part's easy. Like, I'm excited to do this new thing, which is just sell a major hit, you know, to get something on the air. That's going to be super fun because I've really gotten good at not getting things on the air."
And so, Julie, and I, you know, just to reiterate to everyone listening, you've been on the show before talking about marketing, but also I've known you for a number of years now, and you are a blooming genius on marketing, as well as a fantastic writer. And I've read a number of your books as well, which I can't say for everyone who comes on the podcast, but and I know how smart you are as well. Like, I think people underestimate how smart a lot of romance authors are. Like, there's definitely that opinion amongst literary types sometimes. That's not generalized, but so you are very experienced at all of many things, but Julie specifically, what have you learned, because you're a newbie as well in this space? So what have you learned from Jonathan or the process that has been like eye-opening?
God, I've learned a lot. So as far as the screenwriting thing goes, because I thought that was something I wanted to do. So when he approached me, I was like, yeah, let's do that. And after doing it, I realized I'm really not a screenwriter, like, at all. Like, I'm the idea girl, and he's the screenwriter. So that's kind of like how it worked out. That because, like, he's just so good at it. And I think it just comes natural. And I think people, you know, should really do what comes natural to them, because me writing a script is like fighting a battle. And him writing the script is like, you know, doing a dance. It's so different. So I learned that about myself, that I'm not ever going to write screenplays without Jonathan. Like, that's not going to happen. That's not where I'm headed. So I'm really happy that he's my partner and that we can do this together. And also, I mean, I learned a lot about writing in the romance because he's so focused on the art, right, Jonathan? And I am focused on the art too, but I'm always willing to sell out for commercialism.
So am I.
But he keeps me focused on that. So, I mean, I learned a lot of things about myself, and it's really helped me grow, because I think I was a little bit stagnant, because I've been doing this 6 years now, you know, and it's like, it felt a little bit like, well, you know, just doing things on repeat, you know, and now it doesn't feel that way at all. It feels like we're always doing something new and clever, and we're always discussing, you know, new ideas, and it's pretty exciting, I think.
Yeah. And I guess just on the business side, and obviously we can't go into lots of detail, but there are lots of myths that people have around TV stuff, agents, Hollywood. And there are some very, very bad stories that happen of writers signing bad contracts, and obviously things just disappearing into drawers. So some thoughts on how to navigate this world. I mean, with Jonathan by your side, Julie, you have someone who knows a lot about the pitfalls, but again, both of you have not been in depth in this world, I guess, so it's new. So what are some of the pitfalls that you're watching out for, or that you have seen that people should be aware of?
Well, I'll just say one thing, and then I'll hand it to Jonathan. Get a good lawyer, okay? Because Jonathan has a good lawyer, so I didn't have to go looking for a good entertainment lawyer. I just got handed one. And this guy is amazing. So if you have a good lawyer, I think that's step number one. And then what do you think, Jonathan?
You know, my two cents on it is a little more... it's a little less teachable, but it is achievable. It is a learnable skill, and it requires a lot of sort of internal rumination. Keeping your own counsel and trusting your vision and knowing what you want. And again, this is where Julie has helped me, knowing what's important to fight for and what's okay to lay down on, and being very clear about that for yourself will help you navigate these things. I'll tell a little anecdote very quickly. Julie has met him. One of my best friends is an Academy Award winning screenwriter. He wrote The Imitation Game with Benedict Cumberbatch and Keira Knightley. And I was reminded of this with him just the other day. Ron Howard wanted to direct that film before it actually wound up doing what it did. And at that time, Ron was committed to a couple of other projects, and Leo, he wanted to attach Leo DiCaprio, and Leo had a couple of other things. So it would maybe have been, just to your point about things getting put in a drawer or shelved, it could have been 3-4 years. It could have gone into turnaround, who knows? And Graham at that point was not, you know, the Graham Moore that he is now, Academy Award winner. He was a guy who had a screenplay that he was hopeful to get made, but he knew that he wanted it done that year. And he took sort of the temperature of how enthusiastic people were, made the calculated decision that, you know, I think people are excited enough about this that I can find somebody else, even if it's not Ron Howard, and told Ron Howard no. And that is a massive gut check moment. But he was very clear on what he wanted and what he was willing. And for him, you know, it worked out. He also has a few other stories where that has not worked out. But I do think that keeping your own counsel and trusting your own instincts is, because you're the only one who's with you all day, every day. And you have to live with those decisions. So I know that's not a X, Y, and Z, 1+1=2 answer, but it is the best answer I can think of.
And I think it actually ties into what Julie said, because in the way, you know, I agree that sometimes it's about the commercial aspects, like you want something to happen and you want to do whatever you do. But there are some things that aren't negotiable but things that you want to happen and that you're happy to compromise on. So like you say, Ron Howard, everyone's like, wow, that would be amazing. I'd say yes to anything. But of course, we all know plenty of projects that have disappeared into the timeline or have happened and then they've been wrong for that. So that's really interesting. I do want to follow up on the entertainment lawyer aspect and also circle back on this agent thing. When I pitched one of my screenplays and to someone, and they said, why don't you get your literary agent to pitch us? He was an agent, and I said, well, I'm an independent creator. I don't have a literary agent and I'm pitching you. So what's the problem there? So can you explain Hollywood agents versus entertainment lawyers versus literary agents? And both of your perspectives, because you're coming from different angles.
I'm curious to hear what you think. How it looks from your perspective.
So me, I don't even really know what an agent is. So I got no opinion on that. I know he has one. I know he has a manager. He's got like a team of people, but I have no idea what they do. The only one I talk to is the lawyer, and he's the only one I really care about. So the lawyer, I mean, he is just a rock star. So, I mean, I think get the best lawyer you can. And these guys, here's something that I don't think a lot of people know about the Hollywood entertainment lawyers, is they don't charge you by the hour. They take a percentage of your contract, right? So they take 5% or whatever. And so it's not like I had to give them any money either. It's just, you know, I don't even know what it's called, Jonathan. What is it?
Yeah, they just take it. They're commissionable. So they commission off of the deal. And the other thing is, of course, you know, if you negotiate a deal in television a lot, on the acting side specifically, they negotiate the deal before you get an acting job. If it's a big job, like I was on the first time I was ever on a TV series, and they negotiated my deal and showed me all the numbers, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then everyone said, well, yes, if you get the job. They pre-negotiate the deals so that they can't desperately want you, and then you're in the position to have the bargaining power. If they desperately want you and then they negotiate the deal, they lose the power position. So things are pre-negotiated, and the attorneys do all that work. And if you don't wind up closing and getting that job, they've done all that work for $0 exactly, you know? But when you hit the home run, they get paid. As far as the agenting side of it goes, forget the talent stuff. I'll just focus on the literary side. And of course, there's, you know, if you're at a big agency like CAA, for example, or William Morris Endeavor. These are names that people tend to know. You have someone who handles your book stuff and someone who handles the TV side and someone who handles the feature side. So you don't have one agent who handles everything. And if, correct me if I'm wrong, both of you maybe know about, more about this than I do, but even in the literary world and the novel writing side, there are agents who handle romance novels and then agents who just handle sci-fi. So everyone's sort of niche and specialized, right? I think that as far as the film and TV side of it goes, what I said earlier is the way that I prefer to operate, which is I don't like to run things by them first and find out whether or not they think it's a good idea. Because again, I use my friend Graham as an example all the time, because he was told repeatedly, don't waste your time writing a movie about a British gay war,
scientist,
code cracking, right? Scientist spy. Like, no one gives a shit. And another friend of mine who's a very successful screenwriter said to me recently, he's like, I just write everything first. He's like, I don't even pitch. He said, I actually write the whole thing, hand them the completed version and say, this is what I want to sell, and then tell them what to do. And then he said, and when I sell it, it's nice because then no one's ambiguous about what my vision was, because I've already fulfilled my vision. It's on the page. It depends on, and then I know other writers who are like, I won't write a word of script until you paid me. I have no interest in like giving my talent away for free. I think that, again, the agent relationship, and Julie and I actually just took on an agent for international sales for the books. And I think that the agent relationship it's crucial because they have access that you don't. They do a lot of the work that I don't want to do. I don't want to make the phone calls. I don't want to hustle. But I think it's important, especially for anyone who's just stepping into one, to set the parameters of how you want that to look very clearly at the beginning. And for me, the parameters are, I don't want to be subject to you. I don't work for you. You work for me. You make your money if I make money. And as a consequence, I will take your counsel and advice. But again, this goes back to keep your own counsel. But I encourage them to do the things that I want to see done. I don't know it, but I think that looking, a lot of people make the mistake, and then I'll shut up. A lot of people make the mistake of looking at these people as somehow they're antagonists, like that, oh, my agent's so blah, blah, blah. Or if I just had a better agent, everything would whatever. You are the product, you are the content creator. And so you are the responsible party. And to foist off successes or failures onto the shoulders of someone else is to deny your own individual agency. And to bring it back around, I mean, that's the agent that I listen to the most, is the one that I feel like is responsible for being inside me. I know that that's, again, I could say a bunch of bullshit. That's also true. But this to me is the stuff that, like, actually, this is the difference between I sold a thing, or I had this opportunity and I'm going to build a career that I can have longevity in. Julie is a great example of consistency in her success in sales. And that's because it all rises and falls on the shoulders of what she does or doesn't do as an independent author. And so she's learned how to be accountable to herself in a way that she, can trust her own instincts. And I think that that's going to, as we move into this next phase of stuff for the two of us, is going to serve both of us in great stead.
Anyway. Well, Julie, so can I just ask, did you have a literary agent before this?
No.
Yeah. So, and that's what I thought. So this is, you said earlier, I am not a collaborator. So now you have a you have a co-writer, you have an agent, you have now producers, Hollywood stuff.
I have the Foreign Rights agent, and I do work with Podium Publishing, as you know. But I don't have any. I still don't have an agent. He has the agent. I don't have an agent.
But in terms of, I guess I'm circling back now to your books, because you are also both now doing books together. And So from what it sounds like with the script, you have the books. Jonathan is actually writing the actual script, but you have the IP originally and you're working together. How does the co-writing on a book work when you have been so in control of everything up until now? So how is co-writing from your perspective and how's it working?
Okay, so here's where it gets real interesting. Look at Jonathan. He's like, can't wait to hear this. So it's as great and easy as the script went, that's how hard and difficult the books went. It was totally different. I wouldn't say it was all me. I think it was 50-50 for both of us trying to wrap our heads around this process of collaboration from what each of us wanted out of it. And so it was pretty difficult, the first four books, when we finished that series. And then, like, once that was over, it's like a huge relief because we had all these deadlines. They were all up in pre-order. We had the contract with Podium to do the narration, and it was really stressful. And then when it was over, we decided to write the next book, which we almost didn't know if we were going to do, but we did. And then this last book was like writing the screenplay. Don't you think, Jonathan?
Yes.
It was so much easier. It's like the first four books, that series was like growing pains and learning and everything. And then when we finished it, it was like we accomplished something. We understood each other better. And then like writing this last book, The Sexpert, was a totally different experience. It was back like how things were last summer writing the screenplay.
How are you actually doing it? Like, are you drafting and the other one rewriting, or how are you doing it?
No, we do chapter by chapter. So he does his chapter and I do my chapter, and then we send back and forth. So we do chapter by chapter.
Different points of view.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, Jonathan, you were going to say something.
Oh, not at all. I was going to just say part of the reason that that's true is that, I said this in the author's notes. They were my first books, and I've wanted to write books for a long time. And so that, talk about being precious. It was very precious to me. I had really lofty literary aspirations for what I wanted to put on the page. Julie was constantly reminding me, that's fine. And that's great. We are writing genre fiction, to which point I don't know that a collaboration like this from a novel writing standpoint works outside of genre, because genre has rules and it's like television. There are certain sort of, things you have to hit and there are benchmarks and so forth. If you were writing some allegorical fantasia in which, you wanted to write the great British or American novel, it would be much harder to write with somebody because that's such a deeply personal thing. But writing romance, sci-fi, I have some sci-fi friends who write in tandem. You find, what the tropes are and you obey the rules of the genre, and then you just stamp your imprimatur and your voice onto that. And so fortunately, it's gotten easier again, because what Julie and I think maybe lost sight of, or I certainly did, is that we actually share a voice. Like, our part of the reason this works well is our worldviews in terms of the way we tell story lines up really nicely. And we are very good mimics, so we can imitate each other's voices. So she'll go into chapters I've written and tinker a little bit, and vice versa. And then we'll find that way to make it synergistic. So yeah, it's gotten much easier because this most recent book wasn't a big sweeping epic. It was a fun, really funny rom-com. And I think that, we may have found our sweet spot in terms of what we're good at,
Yeah, that's fantastic. We're almost out of time. Julie, what is next from your perspective? Like, what's happening next in terms of the books? Are you still just J.A. Huss? Are you Huss McLean? Are you now TV? Is TV the thing? What's going on?
I don't really know what's going on. I know I'm definitely Huss McLean. Everything else is up in the air. So I don't know. I'll keep writing books as J.A. Huss, but like, I usually have my next year planned out, and I do not have 2019 planned. So I don't know.
But I think that's what's great. It's great to talk to you about this, actually, because when we met you know, a few years ago, I felt the edge of this beginning. I felt that you were feeling like, I'm doing everything. You know, you really have done everything, it feels like, in within yeah. what you were doing before. And now you're moving into this next phase. It's yeah. actually, it's so, because I, you know, I really respect what you do. And to hear you say you haven't planned out next year because you're going to see what's happening, that's awesome. That's actually awesome.
Thanks.
It's great. It's really good. So tell us the timeline on the company. Is it called The Company, or you don't it's need to tell us? It is called. Yes. What's the timeline on that? Do we know?
Jonathan.
Now that we have gotten a sign off from our producers, they will start setting these meetings. We have tiers of outlets that we want to approach. We want to hit X, Y, and Z place first, blah, blah, blah. And then we'll work down the line. You know, there comes a point where you sort of surrender if you don't get a thing sold. So I'm not thinking about that yet, but it could be as quick as 2 weeks from now that we could have it sold and be writing off the script. Or it could be never. 7 months from now. And yeah, or never. Could be never.
Well, that's the interesting thing. And I know we've got to go, but I just have one more question. Okay, so what if, because we all like to think about what if this does turn into The Handmaid's Tale or Game of Thrones? So we have to plan for failure and success. So if it is that massive, will you too, like, become the head of the writer's room? Will you ditch everything else? Like, have you thought about the ramifications for massive success?
Yes, we have it built into our contracts, actually. But we don't have to make a decision yet, right, Jonathan? Right. We get to wait.
Yeah, I'm going to be very clear. No one's going to let us run this show. No one's going to let it. No one's going to let two people who've never run a show, especially the one. This is an expensive show. It's a big show. The scope is vast. So if we get it to the next, if we get it to the script order phase, Netflix says, yes, let's do this. We'll go ahead. Here's money to go write the script. We write the script. We turn that in. Even if they adore that script, it still doesn't get made until and unless they attach celebrity A or fancy director B or whoever, because of the sheer size of this thing, they're going to want to make sure they've got someone running the show who has a firm grasp. And then Julie and I do have the option in this deal to a couple different scenarios. We could either stick around and be a party to this and give what they call, you know, material consultation on set mm-hmm. in person. Or if we're having too much fun writing books, and if I'm on a TV show right now. So like if that sits in first position, if that's in production and I can't do it, there is also an option where we step back and take a more passive role. And that would be the one where I'd be interested to see how Julie feels. If we have to do that, and Julie, because that's you basically turning over the reins to somebody who isn't even me and say, yeah, take this in whatever direction you want to go, and trusting that they won't completely screw up everything that you've created. That would be the curious thing to watch out.
Well, I hope we don't take that path, actually. I'm hoping sure. for the other one, but it's up to your schedule. So.
Really interesting. Look, I really love talking to you guys about this. I think it's so fascinating to see two highly professional people coming together to create something new. And I'm very excited to see what happens next. I'm obviously, you two are, but everybody listening, everyone listening is now like, oh my goodness, I hope it goes through. So just tell people, finally, where can they find you and everything you do online so that people can keep up with it and also check out your books?
They can find me on Twitter at Jay Huss. They can find me on Facebook at Facebook author Jay Huss. They can find me at my website at jhuss.com. And they can find us both at hussmclain.com. And then, what's your Twitter, Jonathan, and all that?
Oh, yeah. I'm Mr. Jay McClain, MisterJMcClain, which I thought would be like easy, but I still have to spell it.
Fantastic. Well, look, thanks so much to both of you for your time. That was great.
Thank you, Joanne. I'll see you again soon.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Julie and Jonathan today. I certainly did. And you can try their books as Huss MacLean or check out Julie's books under J.A. Huss. Now, next week, I have an interview which I know many of you are going to be interested in, which is how to self-publish and market a children's book with Karen Inglis. I get so many questions about writing children's books and how to publish them effectively with print and also how to market them. Because, of course, you can't really market directly to children. Well, no, you can't market directly to children online. So what are the best ways? Now, Karen is doing really well, and she has recently kind of moved into selling significantly more print books. And we talk about that on the show. So I think we're at a tipping point for children's books for indies. So look forward to that. Have a wonderful writing week, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.